Salutations and Ave. Welcome to Babylon Rising, a show about queerness, art, and occultism. I am your host, Joe, artist, sorcerer, and satanic witch.
Trying to be irresistible to the very thing that you fear.
I just told you I wasn't afraid.
I know about your fears and superstitions.
BSB, you're afraid.
Witchcraft is the only honest religion that makes things happen now.
Mystical, ethereal, and magical means of protection from the evils of our world are kinds and types of practices common around the world and throughout time and space. This is the subject of exploration for this episode. We'll be exploring protection magic. It's not necessarily a great revelation to consider that it has always been prudent to have some mundane means of deterring danger, disease, violence, and misfortunes. And that the same is true in a magical sense. And I'm not going to get into the tangent that I so would love to delve into about what is magical versus what is non-magic, what is mundane, where is the line. Of course, it's not so clear. It hasn't been, and it's not now, and different people and practices have different views about this. But I just said that I'm not going to get totally derailed, so I will not. At the end of the day, concern for safety and protection are as relevant to contemporary witchcraft as they have been any other time in any other case. And this episode, I hope to explore what protection magic is and what it can be through the lens of a select few spells and rituals I have chosen to dissect with you. Of course, I've got to give an obligatory disclaimer, my beloved listeners, for you all to keep in mind that I don't know everything. I am not knowledgeable in every and all practices, and I do present my own magical insight to you, insights informed by study, by experience, but also informed by my own biases and preferences. I mean, I start the introduction of the show making clear that I am a gay, transgender, satanic witch, so keep that in mind. With that obligatory disclaimer about, you know, taking what I say with a bit of a grain of salt, especially where I'm not mentioning or quoting something like from a specific text or historical document, we should move on. All right, I think a good place to start with understanding most kinds of mystical practices is with the question of why would someone want to do something like this? What do people get out of this kind of practice? And the answer can really vary depending on the approach that you're taking to this question. You could consider maybe the physiological or the psychological aspects of witchcraft, and of course the metaphysical aspects of witchcraft, and depending, you know, which aspect you're leaning on more can lead you to a slightly different explanation. In the case of something like hanging the pentacle of Saturn for protection against sudden death and accidents which could cause it in your car for safe travels, it could give people a level of comfort that allows them to, you know, in this example, I don't know, focus more clearly on driving. I don't drive, and this isn't necessarily my perspective on magic anyways, but, you know, I'd figure I'd throw it out there since that is an approach that some people take, especially plenty of chaos magicians. But, you know, you could also use the example of, like, I don't know, people who hang rosaries in their cars. Like, this isn't necessarily an explanation or a way of thinking about this kind of stuff that's specific to witchcraft or witchy things that we might do to protect ourselves. the power of symbolism, the power of magical thinking. These aren't things that are exclusive to us practitioners, but they are something that we do take advantage of to one degree or another. You, of course, could also consider the, you know, physical properties of plenty of protection rituals and protection spell components, which are quite literally protective, antibacterial, antifungal, whatever else. A common herb used in protection workings is vervain, and it is a plant with that spiritual protective association, and it is also a bactericide and antiviral to some degree. Lime, fever grass, certain incense smoke and ashes, these often have been tools of bush doctors and folk druggists in the tradition of Jamaican folk magic now and in the past. And furthermore, it's not at all uncommon that, I don't know, shields, spikes, knives are symbols of protection used in ritual or as talismans to ward off evil. For sure, I can say that plant spirits are a reliable aspect of many of the different kinds of protection workings I do for myself, my friends, my family. Very reliable stuff. Highly recommend, for sure. There is the more esoteric perspective that there is a metaphysical layer of reality that interacts with what we typically perceive, and on this level, we have to ensure our safety just as we do in a more mundane sense. Spiritual illness or attack can manifest into our lives in strange and disturbing but very real ways. There's also the common perspective in many traditions that misfortune and illness are themselves evil spirits that must be warded off. It's not uncommon to read accounts from Obeah men, from mother healers, from the Caribbean islands, who are discussing the ills of their patients in terms of duppies. Not uncommon at all, and is another way of approaching protection magic, because you aren't just, I don't know, taking some NyQuil for your cold. You also need to ward away the evil duppy of the sickness so that you can recover even faster than if you were to just consume the NyQuil and, I don't know, go to bed. I'm aware that I didn't quite capture the many, many ways of viewing how protective magic is interacting with our well-beings and, you know, the stuff we're trying to protect. How is that interacting with the protection magic we're casting? There are many, many perspectives on this that I am sure that I don't even know about. But, you know, this isn't exactly where I wanted this train ride to stop. So we are going to move on to what I think is very, very important to consider: the potential repercussions of lacking good spiritual protection can be leaving yourself vulnerable to spiritual attack from other practitioners. I mean, that's not the most common risk, but it is a risk. You're leaving yourself vulnerable to potentially malefic spirits who are, you know, intending to bring about your misfortune or your downfall, etc. You're also at risk of accidental but potent ill intent from the untrained. The evil eye is absolutely no joke whatsoever. If you're doing ritual or spell work for yourself or others, and going to places of power and dealing in liminality, you likely, more than likely, need to protect yourself lest you draw in unwanted, unforeseen, and detrimental circumstances. Even if you're the kind of person that only does healing spells for friends and family who you ask for permission and then they give you their consent, you still want to be protecting yourself. Although if you are that kind of practitioner, I don't know what you quite would get out of my show, because This is particularly a satanic program, and I do let that influence how I discuss magic, but, you know, everyone is welcome, I guess. In being exposed to these powers beyond yourself, you open yourself up to some beautiful transcendent experiences, and at the same time to potential spiritual parasites, human or otherwise. Because, like I said, it doesn't have to be another practitioner who is, I don't know, feeding off of your energy or giving you evil eye or whatever else. Not to mention the, non-human spiritual beings who wander about looking for a tasty meal to feast upon without your knowledge or consent, typically. Those with malefic or parasitic intentions can put you on a path to destruction. And, you know, I don't mean to fearmonger, because like I said, you know, certain risks are going to be more common than others, but wouldn't you rather be safe than sorry? I think that's like the subtitle of this episode. Wouldn't you rather be safer than sorry? I know myself, the kind of magic I do, people would say it's already very unsafe, but, you know, I take precautions in my own way suitable to the traditions that I am a part of, and you should do the same. I will say, though, myself being a Satanist, I still wouldn't say that people, I don't know, shouldn't have good spiritual protection and spiritual hygiene. I would say the exact opposite, knowing what, you know, what I go through when I'm lacking in those things and dealing with the kinds of spirits that I deal with, even those who I have a good relationship to. If you're not sort of maintaining yourself, you're not going to be able to handle all the, you know, freaky magic that you're intending to do. Or at least that has been my experience, 100%. And, you know, plenty of grimoires and spellbooks that you can read require preliminary spiritual protections and also generally good spiritual hygiene, and that is for a good reason. Protective and, you know, any magic you're doing to protect yourself is a part of decent spiritual hygiene, which can in turn improve your relationship to the spiritual and the physical world, because the spirits you devote yourself to, they also want for you to be safe, and for you to take a bit of responsibility for ensuring your own safety, however that best looks for you in your tradition, like I said. Neglect of this aspect of neglect of this aspect of a magical practice can leave you, like I said, unnecessarily vulnerable, especially as a practitioner. Of course, I don't mean to imply that non-witches or occultists or sorcerers, however you identify yourself, can't experience spiritual attack or sickness or misfortune or whatever else, especially if someone is, I don't know, putting crosses on them or something like that. However, when you practice, you're in more situations that would incite these kinds of things. And when you practice and you're not protecting yourself, it's like I said, you know, wouldn't you rather be safe than sorry? Do you want random parasites to, you know, be diminishing your spiritual power? Do you want to find out what that feels like the hard way? No, I would hope not, especially if you are, like I said, dealing in liminality, going to crossroads, going to graveyards, you know, opening up portals in your bedroom, in your shower, whatever else you're doing. No judgment, because I am very interested myself in exploring the limits of magic and how that can change a person and a person's reality. But even if those are your intentions and you're interested in doing weird stuff with magic like myself, you still want to have some precautions and protections. I feel like now is a fair time to run through some examples of, you know, what you're risking when you are lacking in decent spiritual protection. Some of those things being sudden, inexplicable misfortune, you know, mysteriously losing belongings, paranoia, anxiety, extreme self-consciousness, seemingly inescapable feelings of doom, nightmares, strange physiological reactions, like randomly feeling hot or randomly feeling cold or randomly feeling like your elbow tingle, that kind of stuff. Random conflicts in your romantic relationships, household, or family, pets or animals behaving strangely around you, sudden changes to the efficacy or potency of your magic or spiritual gifts, impotence, or hypersexuality, unusual changes in your sexual energy in general. And with that list sort of gotten out of the way, I do want to make it clear, my point is not to delve into like uncrossing or healing stuff related to spiritual illness, lack of good spiritual protection, that kind of stuff. At least not in this episode in particular. I really just wanted to focus on the importance of protecting yourself when dealing with the spiritual world, and in general, not to alarm or overwhelm anyone. And of course, nuance is of the utmost importance. You want to be able to discern what is going on with your spiritual body, with your spiritual self, and not jump to conclusions. Here is where divination comes in great handy, or in convening with your spirit, or if you are lucky and blessed enough to have spiritual friends or practitioners who you're close to, it's always great to have each other. It's great to check each other's work and sort of read each other and give each other like a good sense of, you know, what's going on. But you know, not everyone has that, so divination and consulting spirits who you devoted yourself to is very important, because more often than not, if you otherwise have a good relationship with the spirits and beings you've devoted yourself to, they will give you some indication that you're at some kind of spiritual risk, or you're about to do something spiritually dangerous to put yourself at further risk, or if you've been crossed, which again, I'm not focusing on uncrossing kind of stuff, but yeah. I feel like up until now, we've just like sort of been scratching the surface, because now, finally, I'd like to share how I, as a practitioner, approach this kind of spell work. I look at protection, magic, and spell work in terms of three permeable categories. They're not hard and fast rules. They're ways of breaking stuff down to help you approach a problem more efficiently. For me, those categories are 1, adornments and anointments, 2, ritual, evocations and invocations, and 3, psychic protections. I do want to reiterate that these are not hard and fast rules or strict categories. This is just a way of helping to break down and simplify what you might want to think about before you approach this kind of working. Before I approach this kind of working, it helps me sort out my thoughts and available resources and time, and more effectively approach the issue of protecting myself spiritually. So adornments and anointments would be anything you would adorn yourself or your personal space with. Stuff like guards, oils, talismans, icons, fetishes, veils, whatever else it may be. Ritual invocations and evocations would be rituals are spells that focus on drawing on particular divine, infernal, demonic, or planetary powers into yourself or your ritual space to petition them for their protection. Certain kinds of spoken or written charms, prayers, devotional acts, specific sigils or symbols, and devotional oils or fragrances, also devotional acts as well. Like, you know that the spirit offers you protection on the condition that you complete certain activities or tasks or such. Lastly, psychic protections are like visualizations, meditations, or psychic exercises that strengthen your psychic and mental boundaries. Now, I see the importance of a breakdown like this as being for the purposes of simplifying the solutions to help me better approach problems. All right, if I am having nightmares and I'm feeling like I need a bit of a boost to my protection and my sleep, and for the sake of my dreams and my rest, I'm definitely going to approach that differently to, you know, needing protection for my commute to work, or needing protection in my place of employment, or needing protection when I go, you know, do whatever I'm planning on doing at a crossroads or in a graveyard or whatever else. It's also important to consider what materials you have available. So like, if my go-to, I'm not gonna project necessarily, but like, for example, if a go-to method of protection for myself is to use frankincense and myrrh, and I'm out of frankincense and myrrh, then I gotta think of something else, right? So it's a way to take note of what materials you have, what are your circumstances, you know, what is the problem and how can you solve the problem the most quickly, so I don't have to be, you know, doing every single protection working I could possibly think of for, you know, the example of nightmares, right? Something very important to consider about protection magic is, I would say there's such thing as too much protection workings to the point that you end up blocking your own opportunities in life, to the point that you're like basically crossing yourself with all of this protection magic. And there's such a thing as useless protection, I think, as well. Like, I think it's important to be very intentional about what you are protecting yourself from, because if you don't have a conception of what it is you're protecting yourself from, which is why I went through a list a little bit earlier about what are potential risks of, you know, not sound protection, you want to have a good idea of what you're protecting yourself from, because if not, I'm of the opinion that having protection that you haven't conceptualized the use of it and its purpose very clearly, it's going to invite something to test you. I think it's worth being cautious of too much protection, because one way or another, too much of a good thing is not a good thing. So you definitely want to be very, very cautious in that sense. I mean, not overly cautious. I'm certainly not an overly cautious person when it comes to protection magic. I try to meet my problems with solutions. I don't, you know, have unnecessary, what I would see as unnecessary protections. And of course, you know, that's up to everyone. I think my examples give you a sense of my frame of mind with this. You know, on my commute, do I need protection? Yes. You know, when I go to sleep, if I'm struggling with nightmares, clearly, you know, something is not working with the protections that I have generally upon my person, my home, whatever else. I need to think differently about this because I'm having nightmares. Stuff like this, right? If I'm feeling like particularly unlucky, you know, I'm probably going to check on my protections first before I do a Lex spell, for example. You know, that's the other thing. If you're having an issue, you might want to consider the state of your protections before you consider anything else, you know, because a protection in general, and then, you know, if your protections are all good, then go ahead with whatever other methods you feel need to be implemented, right, to combat whatever issue it is, if it's bad luck in general, or like, you know, issues with your job or your work or something like this, right? These are all things I invite you to consider in this episode and going forward in your practice if you don't already think about it, because I'm so particular about how I construct and implement my protections, because I don't, you know, work smarter, not harder, okay? I don't want to be doing a bunch of very exhausting protection magic for no good reason, you know? if I have a method of protection that covers, you know, most of the bases, that's good enough for me. And again, that's on me. You know, I know plenty of other people, they approach this differently, but I think it's worth being considerate, thoughtful, and intentional, especially as practitioners. Okay. I did also want to get into some spell work in this episode, and a great influence upon me my whole life and my practice is various Afro-Caribbean mythology, religion, and folk tales, and spiritual practice. And so I did want to get into talking about pretty much my favorite method of protection ever. Like, I'm actually getting extremely excited just to speak about it. And it is guards. So a guard is... how do I describe it? So I think first I'll say that in terms of, at least in terms of like Jamaican folk magics, basically misfortune that you come across, illness, bad luck, disease, you know, just misfortune in life, it's evil spirits, all right? It's duppies, all right? If you're having a problem, it's probably being caused by a duppy. And so in protecting yourself, what you need to be focusing on is warding off these evil spirits, these duppies. And there are many ways to do that. Very commonly is going to be a bath, which I'll probably talk about that as well. But there are many ways to protect yourself from these duppies. And these duppies, you need to prevent them from harming you or your family, of course, or your livelihood. And so I do have for you an excerpt from a book that I'm always reading and rereading called The Cultural Politics of Obeah, Religion, Colonialism, and Modernity in the Caribbean World by Diana Payton. It is very good if this is a subject that you're interested in, but I will read now an excerpt for you. Quote, alongside rituals designed to remove ghosts, others focused on protection. Many practitioners provided guards for their clients, assemblages of ritual substances, often tied in cloth, which were to be worn around the neck, kept in a pocket, or placed underneath a pillow. Joseph Harvey, for instance, gave a client what he called a guard, to be worn around the wrist, made of a piece of new calico, in which was stitched a small bag containing a pebble and 3 pence. Many of the materials and actions discussed so far feature prominently in other accounts of Obeah practice. Unquote. This is just one example, because you can read about guards and how they're made, and they're made of many, many different kinds of cloths. They contain many different types of roots, herbs, pebbles, coins, charms. Like, they're made many, many different ways. The general idea, as mentioned in the quote, is ritual substances tied together in cloth and worn out of place where, you know, prying eyes are not going to be constantly viewing it. So, like, in your clothes where they're obscured, or also underneath your pillow as well, right? I think in the modern day, if you're more familiar with this kind of folk magic or folk tales, you'll mostly hear about guard rings or guard jewelry. A guard in general, it's going to be as described. It's going to be basically, I think it would be similar to like a mojo bag. I'm less familiar with other cultures, although I know this is a kind of ritual spell
technology that is common in many different cultures. You have a special cloth filled with special things, and it protects you from evil and misfortune, etc. However, I know it as a guard, all right, and I am familiar with guard jewelry, and I could tell you some interesting stories about people and what has happened to them and their guard jewelry and how the protection it has offered them has been quite spectacular and absolutely amazing. Something else to say is that it's not, you know, you have to, like, activate the technology, right? You don't just put a bunch of, you know, I was a little bit flippant earlier, you don't just put a bunch of stuff in a bag and then it's a guard, right? These, you know, ritual material, they are, you know, ritually awoken, they're spoken to, you speak to their spirit, you communicate with them, and you negotiate with them for your protection, right? And then you wear the guard, or you give the guard to whoever you have made it for, and boom, you are offered this protection. And then you obviously you have to be able to perpetuate the longevity of this protection through further feeding it, further communing with the spirits that you're conjuring for the sake of your protection. This is something that I do. I enchant jewelry as well, but I wouldn't call it guard jewelry because I don't do it in this way. I enchant jewelry in a way that's not as much to do with my culture necessarily, or like my familiarity with Jamaican folk magic, but guards, 100% my favorite method of protection, because it can solve a lot of different problems, all right? I like to hit a lot of targets, all right? Hit many birds with one stone, and guards can do a lot. They can help you out if you're in a particular specific situation. They can help you out in general, and they're always on your person, so they're always acting upon you, or they're always wherever you put them, right? I love guards, all right? And I do just love how versatile they are in terms of incorporating different aspects of adornment and anointment, using oils, using talismans, using religious symbols and iconography, and in terms of invocation and evocation, because obviously you're communing with the spirits whose protection you are petitioning for in the creation of a guard, right? I just love that. Another amazing protection ritual that I desperately would like to speak to you all about comes from Jamaican folk magic, and I am going to read about this to you from the book Jamaican Folk Medicine, A Source of Healing by Arvilla Payne Jackson and Mervyn C. Elaine. I love this book. It is small but mighty. It's mostly about herbal medicine and folk healing, but it does touch on some folk traditions in terms of spirituality, just because that's oftentimes the nature of herbal medicine. It's very intertwined with the religious and spiritual beliefs of the people that are practicing the healing. Actually, this is them quoting someone else. The authors of this book are quoting Hosman, 1994-3. Quote, to get rid of a duppy, you can burn incense to get it out of your home. Mark crosses on the doors of the house. You can also go round to each doorway of the home, striking match at each one, blowing it out and tossing it into the doorway. Repeat this procedure at each door, and when you reach the last entrance, strike the match, blow it out, and pretend to throw it, but instead, you actually hide it on your body. The duppy will leave you alone and feel bound to search for all the thrown matches, but he will never be able to find the last one that you hide. Thus, in theory, he will forever be searching and unable to trouble you ever again. Unquote. This is another example of a protection ritual to ward off evil spirits and therefore, you know, illness, misfortune, etc. And I know for sure there are other similar rituals, but, you know, this is the one that I can quote for you from a book. Otherwise, I'd be going off of, like, vague memories. So these are just a couple, like, really great protection rituals. And of course, this one would be, you know, a bit of an evocation, a bit of a psychic protection, like in terms of fitting it into my breakdown. But of course, that's not the point of the breakdown. It's not to like fit rituals into the breakdown. It's just to help approach a problem. So help approach a problem. So it doesn't really matter in the end. It's just a great little ritual. Of course, asking whichever spiritual forces you serve or devote yourself to for their aid and their protection is also a very effective, very versatile method of protection. And oftentimes, once you take the time to invoke them, conjure them, pray to them, communicate with them in whichever way is most appropriate, they will likely offer you that protection, of course, with whatever caveats or restrictions are between you and them, of course. Nothing in life is free, okay? Whatever. I mean, I'm myself being an occultist who devotes myself to all sorts of very strange otherworldly beings, like Satan or whoever else that I devote myself to. I like to do this. I think it's a good idea not just to do other kinds of rituals for the sake of your protection, because it can help to build an even stronger relationship with you and the spirits which you devote yourself to, for you to put your trust in them, to recognize their power in your life, and to welcome it even. Always a very good idea. Prayer, I mentioned prayer, giving offerings to them, just devoting yourself to your spirits and being in their favor is also a great way to be protected by them. Even if you don't always ask, sometimes they, if you, you know, are especially within their favor and have a good relationship with them and are keeping up with whatever tasks they have been requesting or requiring of you, they will sometimes just step in and protect you without your explicitly asking. So do keep that in mind. Being in the good graces of various very powerful spiritual beings is always a good thing, including your ancestors, by the way. Having your ancestors like know that you give your offerings to them, they especially, more than a lot of other divine forces that you can pray to, don't always need to be asked to protect you. Of course, you should be clear on your spiritual boundaries, and you don't want spirits just intervening however they feel into your life. But, you know, if it's someone or something you have a particularly good relationship with, that's also something to keep in mind, although not to rely on. You want to rely on like having good communication and being in their explicit good graces. You don't always want to rely on spirits just of their own volition intervening in your life. But, you know, it's possible. Lots of things are possible. Obviously, I believe that, or I would not be the kind of occultist that I am. Moving on, a style of protection that I often employ is paper charms. I love paper charms. They're not the most permanent kind of protection working. Of course, it's not the same as like a spell bottle that's made out of glass that's, you know, gonna persist for quite a while, or, you know, other kinds of very intense, very permanent kinds of protection workings, right? Not the same. However, what I actually really appreciate about them is because they're not so permanent, they give you a really clear indication of when they need to be refreshed, replaced, reconstructed, whatever else, because once the paper is tarnished or blemished or ripped or whatever else happens to it, you know automatically that's your sign to replace it and refresh. And it's just something that will motivate me, at least, to keep really on top of this, because obviously any kind of protection working you're doing is something you need to stay on top of and further empower it and feed it to continue working for you, or at least most kinds of workings that you can do. That's the case. I know there are obviously exceptions to any rule that you throw out there, especially in magic. So you need to keep on top of these things. And usually you want to do so through divination or communion with those spirits or your deities or such. You want to have a good method of communication with the spirits and the forces you're working with so that you know when to top things up, depending on, you know, the style of preparation and implementation, right? Whereas paper charms, they tell you when they're done, okay? They tell you when you're done. And also, they're so fun to make. And there's so many great ones from antiquity that people still use today, like some of the pentacles from the Greater Key of Solomon, or some of the, like the phylactery, the Ouroboros snake phylactery from the Greek magical papyri. Love it. I love a paper charm that, first of all, they're made out of paper and ink, which is super accessible, and you could make it any way you please. I like to write little protection poems and stick them in my bags or my wallets. I like to make little protection sigils and stick those wherever I please. And paper charms, you can get as elaborate or as simple as you'd like, whether you're using, I don't know, 8.5 by 11 printer paper that you snip down, or using a Sharpie, or using a graphite pencil, or you using, I don't know, holy consecrated ink and parchment paper. I actually prefer to use watercolor paper because it's mostly cotton, right? So I prefer to use watercolor paper for my paper charms because I already know it's very nice cotton paper. I like to use so many kinds of inks. Yes, I just use markers like Sharpies or like acrylic pens. I like to use golden inks. I like to use watercolors because, you know, if you finagle your setup just right, you can use watercolors with dip pens. And obviously watercolors, depending on the kind of pigments they are, have a long history and use in art and magic, of course. And then anointing your paper charms with incense, with oils, before you stick them wherever they need to be stuck so that they can provide the the protection and perfection that they are meant to give you. So paper charms, I love, I highly recommend. And I feel like you should be noticing a trend here where I tend to favor really, really versatile styles of protection because, you know, that's me. That's who I am. Another very important aspect of protection working is herbs, all right? And obviously, I feel like that goes unsaid, because obviously in a guard, you're going to have your protective herbal allies in your guard, right? In, you know, anointing yourself or consecrating items, you're going to be using oils made of herbs and oils and such, like carrier oils and such. So really that is just absolutely obvious. But for me, that also goes with like teas and such that I'm going to be consuming or bathing in. And I'll get to baths in a little bit because I think I said I would earlier because it is very, 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 very important in my culture. If you are having a problem, you're having a misfortune, you need to go take a bath. And there's not much more that needs to be said after that. But going back to teas, so like fever grass, oh my god, fever grass. I think it's also called sweet grass. I'm always forgetting and mixing it up because obviously that's what my mom has called it all my life. So I get a little confused, but it is fever grass. I'm getting confused. Lemongrass, I think it is also called. Anyways, I love it because it is insanely protective and also is very good for any kind of like cold, flu, fever, congestion in like the nose and throat. Oh my god, it is so good for that. It's also it's antiviral and antibacterial. So I like to drink it like all winter to sort of help keep my immune system up. So I'm like, you know, not catching colds and stuff when I'm taking public transit or going wherever I'm going. I love teas, especially for when it comes to herbal remedies that you can use in magic and also drink and consume. I find just so powerful because I keep a practice where I tend to work very closely and intensely with like one particular herb for like a good while before I feel like really confident I understand it very well and in using it in magic. Fever grass is also a really good protective incense as well in warding off evil and providing protection. So I love fever grass slash I think lemongrass it's also called. Okay, and it just smells and tastes delicious. It tastes like a milder chamomile. Like I don't think chamomile is too strong, but it's just, it's very flavorful. It's kind of really sweet, in my opinion. But fear rest, it's like an even more milder chamomile, if that makes sense. Anyways, talking about baths, all right, and not raving about my favorite herbs to use in protection magic. I mean, I guess it'll come back to that anyways, because, I mean, those are often implemented in bath. So there's so many ways to do a bath. There's so many recipes and concoctions I've come across in my life, in speaking to people and reading in historical documents, what people are bathing with to protect themselves. Commonly, people are going to use laundry bluing, and they're going to bathe with that, right? And the blue is a very refreshing and protective magical material, and so it is absolutely so common in baths and washes, like floor washes. You're gonna wash your door, you're gonna wash, you know, yourself. Very, very protective and cleansing as well. So its properties are in that it is cleansing and purifying you and making it so that bees cannot cross you, okay? And so you are protected, all right? Another very common element in baths is going to be soaps. So, like, I'm not sure if I even want to just talk strictly about soaps or if I want to talk about some of the other very important elements, but I'll talk about soaps a little bit earlier than everything else, just because I grew up using mostly soaps, because anything else I was advised to use, I was very, like, you know, like, I don't want to get into the complexity of having an immigrant mother and being born here in Canada, in North America, in the Imperial Core, and the cultural divides it caused, and the fact that even today we still have trouble understanding each other more often than not. And so some of this, you know, spiritual wisdom that I squandered because I was just like, why do I have to do this? No one else does this. People are making fun of me for doing it, but I'm not getting into that. Okay, we're going to talk about soaps. Commonly, there's blue soap. So obviously, laundry bluing is very popular in baths. And there's also laundry bluing soap bars. And I think they are meant for using in your laundry, like if you're using a washboard. And obviously, you need bar soap for your washboard. This bluing soap is meant for laundry, right? Which, if you don't know, I just realized that I skipped this part. Laundry bluing is a very faint, like, blue pigment that you add to whites to make your whites whiter. This is also a principle in painting as well. Like, adding just a tinge of blue makes whites really pop in a painting or an artwork. This is also very important in laundry, all right? And laundry bluing is a very important spiritual material. And so there's bluing soap. And so, like, my mom would get me to bathe with bluing soap all the time. And it would be like, oh, it's good for everything. Use it to wash your face. Use it to wash your body. Use it to wash everything. And your laundry. It's all purpose. And it's going to have a similar effect to the blue, the bluing squares, that they're just more concentrated. And you're, like, if you were to use them in laundry, and also if you're gonna bathe with them, you break it up and you don't use the whole thing, because it's bluing squares are very concentrated, whereas the bluing soap, it's already diluted because it's meant for just straight up just using with laundry. And also people bathe with it for spiritual protection and cleansing. So other soaps that are very important is going to be carbolic soap. So carbolic soap, it used to be made with carbolic acid, which I believe is what originally gave it a really, really red color. And it's used to be called red soap as well. You can, like, look up pictures of, like, vintage carbolic soap. Although the carbolic acid came to be recognized as, I think, carcinogenic is what it was wrong with it. So it's not used in these soaps anymore, but the soaps are still called carbolic soaps, and they are basically a very, very strong antibacterial soap that people still use today to wash themselves with. And in moderation, they can be pretty good for your skin. Like, in moderation, antibacterial soaps can be very, very good for you. And in baths, in spiritual baths, there's a large intersection between things that are, like, actually physically antibacterial and things that are spiritually going to protect you from harm. And so carbolic soap is very, very important. It has a very insanely strong smell. So keep that in mind if you ever get your hands on some real authentic Jamaican carbolic soap or any other kind of carbolic soap. Again, you don't want to bathe with carbolic soap that's still made with carbolic acid, and mostly you're not going to find those anyways. But in case you do, you kind of don't want to bathe with those. They're not very good for your skin. And the ones people use today tend to not have carbolic acid in them. I'm just making that clear because it is, you know, in magic, we sometimes deal with various dangerous substances. So be careful out there and do lots of research. Also very important in baths. I'm just getting so into baths because it's just extremely important, and it's just a simple go-to method of protecting yourself. Another very important material in baths is going to be Dettol, which is it's an antiseptic. It's like a medical, like a first aid kit kind of thing. And bathing with Dettol is very, very, very much so a thing. Okay. Obviously, you don't use a lot at all. You like tip a tiny bit in like a bathtub and or like a wash basin, and then you use that. But again, be careful. Don't listen to me about these things, because you don't want to have an allergic reaction or chemical burns or whatever else, okay? I'm just telling you, this is a thing. Dettol actually also make body washes. So if you're like, I need to bathe with Dettol because I just absolutely need to be protected, I'm just going through something right now, just know they make body washes and you could potentially use that, and that's also just as good, okay? Other important ingredients in baths would be things like eggshells, rum is very important, like herbs, like brewing up your herbs to have them release some of their active ingredients into the hot water, like making a hot water infusion and bathing with that, also going to be important. And then there are various different herbs that people recommend depending on your circumstances. Part of the benefit of consulting like a spiritual worker, like a spiritual expert, like a scientist or a mother healer or something like this, is they have the ability to diagnose your issue and where you're lacking spiritually and what exactly you need to bathe with. They tailor their prescriptions, basically, because they're called, these spiritual workers, they're called scientists or doctors, right? They basically tailor their prescription just for you, just like a, you know, medical doctor. There are different kinds of antibiotics, for example, and they're going to prescribe the one that makes the most sense for you and your situation. That's what these people are able to do spiritually. However, I'm just generally going over some of my favorite, you know, spiritual things, okay? Another important aspect is spiritual colognes. I'm not going to delve too deep into oils because I don't want to be going on forever and ever, but spiritual colognes are like quick and dirty and fast. You don't necessarily need to bathe with them, although you can add a little bit to a bath concoction of your own making and just tip a little bit and you can use that. However, spiritual colognes, you can just spray them onto yourself because they're cologne, they're perfume, and they can be very, very protective. Some of the most protective I'm familiar with is going to be Kenenga water or even Florida water. Those two, I mean, I prefer Kenenga water, but spiritual colognes. And you want to keep in mind when it comes to working protection and using spiritual materials is you have to activate them, you have to speak to their spirit, you have to communicate with them to get the full benefit of the protection out of them. So with that being said, I think I'm going to end the episode here because I honestly could talk about various rituals of one kind or another for a long time, which is why I have a podcast. But I don't want to bore you and just be going on and on and on. I'm going to end it here. I really appreciated our time together. I hope you got a lot out of this episode to think about your own practice. Let me know if you have your own system for breaking down protection magic, or I don't know, and any other kind of particular type of working that you have to go through. Like, do you have a system like this one? Do you have an even more finely tuned system than this one? Because I would love to know. Do you have like no system and you just speak to the spirits and you just go from there? You know, my friend Ezra, who was on the last episode, she is like that. She is just insanely spiritually gifted, and she just speaks to the spirits. She speaks to the answers. She speaks to the gods, and she just goes from there. Okay, she's amazing. But I don't want to be raving about Ezra the whole end of this episode. I will let you know that if you want to get into contact with me, where I am mostly is on Instagram, okay? And my Instagram is at venus.libidina. It's always linked in the episode description. So is my email if you want to reach out to me. I would always appreciate a rating and review on whichever podcast platform you listen to. And until next time, Ave Babylon.
Irresistibly to the very thing which you fear. I just told you I wasn't afraid. I know about your fears and superstitions. BSB, you're afraid.
Witchcraft is the only honest religion that makes things happen now.